The findings and observations. So it's item number 5 on the report, 5.1 and 5.2 on the screen.
Chairperson?
Yes.
With your permission, Chairperson, can I request that I assist you so that you don't strain your voice? I'll just call the numbers of the observations up to the end of the report.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Chairperson, I agree with that. We're grateful that you've come, despite the fact that you are off work. I don't think the committee should appreciate that you're not well, and wish you well for a full recovery.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. I'll start with observation, finding an observation. 5.18. We're moving now, members and chairperson, to the recommendations. Recommendation 6.1. 6.2. 6.3. 6.4. 6.5. 6.6. 6.7. 6.8. 6.9. 6.10. 6.11. 6.12. 6.13. 6.14. 6.15. 6.16. 6.17. 6.18. 7, the committee decision. The committee decision reads as follows. The Select Committee on Appropriations, having considered the appropriation bill B3 of 2023, referred to it for concurrence and classified by the joint taking mechanism as a Section 77 bill, reports that it has agreed to the bill without any proposed amendments. Thank you, Chairperson, and members. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Babalo. Can we now move for the adoption? Can I seek for removal for the adoption of the report?
I move, Eunice.
Thank you, Honorable Karim.
I second, Major.
Thank you, Honorable Nita. Are there other hands? As usual?
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Ryder.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Ryder.
Chair, the report covers adequately what was discussed. It just makes no sense at all in line of all of those observations and recommendations that we would end up with that conclusion that we support the bill, when it's clear from the contents of the observations and recommendations that there should not be support for the bill and we should be sharpening our pencil and doing things very differently. So the DA, therefore, on the basis only of that very last paragraph, and the fact that we would like to add a whole lot of different things, rejects this report. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Excuse my voice. The Federal Front Press doesn't support this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Muletani.
Thank you, Chairperson. EFF reserves its position on the bill.
Is there any other hand that I couldn't see, Lubabalo?
No, Chairperson. Okay. No, Chairperson, there's no other hand. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you. The report is therefore adopted. The next item on the agenda is PBO.
Just 1 set of minutes, Chairperson, and thereafter the director of PBO and the team will take over and brief the committee. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. I would like to continue as per the mandate that the committee gave me earlier on. Page one of the draft minutes of 7 June 2023. Attendance of members, support staff, the introduction. Point number two is the consideration of the ESCOM debt relief bill report.
Just a minute, Lubabalo, there's a message on the chat group that there's someone identified as 0472. Can you please remove the person if he doesn't or she doesn't?
Okay.
You have attended to it.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just that I'm operating the slide. I think I am familiar. I think that should be Mr. Sinang. Yesterday, I guess him. I think that number is familiar. Am I correct, okay. Mr. Sinamalela?
Yes, you are correct, Chair. Sorry, good morning, but I've changed it now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Apologies, Chair.
Okay, continue.
Okay. Point number three, the consideration of draft minutes and the closing remarks of the acting chair on that day. That's the end of it. Back to you, Chairperson. You may call for the mover in the second. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lubabalo. Can I get a mover for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection?
Mita, move, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Minister. Mr. Kenda. Can I get a second, please, of the minutes?
Oh, Ms. Moses' hand is up, sir.
Who's hand?
I'll second. Okombo second.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Linda as well. I think you wanted also to second, Honorable Moss. Okay, it's Nita moved and Honorable Okamp seconded. Thank you so much, Honorable members. As the next item, PBO Director.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Could I please...
Good morning, Doctor.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Should we start, Chairperson?
Yes, please.
All right. No, thank you. I was waiting for the...
The co-host, are you having the hosting rights?
I think, Husi, do you have a hosting rights?
No, I don't have a hosting right.
Colleagues, please make Husi the host as well, because we have updated our slides quite a bit. But in any case, I'll start in the meantime. But thank you so much, Chair, members. Good morning. It's a very chilly morning in Cape Town. Thank you so much for the opportunity for the TBO to brief the committee on this series of our underspending analysis that we are undertaking. I'm with the PBO team on the platform, but also want to also introduce one of our new members of the team who joined the office this month as our economic analyst, Ms. Kagiso Mamabolo. Thank you so much, Chair. Just move to the next slide, Husi. I think maybe in the next slide, this is a background slide. I think, Chair, we have embarked on a series of analysis. The previous slide, just in the outline. We have embarked on a series of understanding, try to understand the issues around oversight. The previous slides was in it. Just try to understand the issues around underspending on different government functions for various reasons in this regard. But I think some of the main concerns that we let us do this, it's also the concerns from the committees, from members, from the various stakeholders around perceived or real underspending in various government functions. One of the reasons why is that obviously we have such concerns around service delivery in our country, and clearly underspending would be seen to undermine that concerns. But also one of the concerns we have, Chair, members and colleagues, is around really understanding that concern that sometimes some perceived or real underspending could lead to unnecessary cutting of spending in some of these important areas of government function. So really, that's broadly the sense of why we thought of this. So I'll give some situational analysis to understand some of the key issues, but also really, it's really looking at the trend over the very longitudinal study around underspending. We focus on health today, but we've got other sectors that we're looking at over the period of time, which will brief the committee. And hence, we thank the committee for giving us time to really brief you in this regard. Can go to the next slide. Well, we'll definitely focus on, look at specifically conditional grants as well, which is also a very important area, particularly for this important House of Parliament. I think it's quite timely, Chair, and members and colleagues, that we're having this brief today after yesterday's National Assembly having debate to discuss the issues around the needs of universal health care in South African context. And in our view, I think it was very timely that we have this discussion, it's a sort of continuation of discussion in this regard. Universal health care is a fundamental right, as stated out in the Constitution. Everyone has a right to have access to health care services, including the reproductive health. And very importantly, that the Constitution requires government to show that the proper mechanisms in place ensure that such health care is provided. We are concerned that there has been a lot of progress done. We look at the reports, status data on the outcomes of health care, and also government reports. There has been a lot of progress been done around the providing health care for majority of Africans. However, we note that governance remains behind its realizing national development outcomes in this regard. So more work needs to be done to ensure that we realize our outcomes. Hence, the importance of the budget is seen as a key policy tool that government has to use to really implement the strategies and policies. And clearly, adherence to such policy tool is an important indicator for overall ability for government to deliver on the programs. And certainly, we, as I said earlier, we've seen there's been a lot of concerns around spending. I thought this would be important to provide a context in terms of understanding what's going on. So this is what this presentation does, and there is a zoom on the conditional grant. I'll give the team to take us through the presentation, Chair and members, and I'll come in later to conclude. I think comes in, colleagues. Chair Paul, or Husi, all right. Take us through this. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. I'll be taking us through the situational analysis where we'll be telling you the context of healthcare in South Africa as we've previously presented. As we've stated before, the PBO, South Africa's public healthcare system remains overstretched and underfunded. Public sector and private sector spend approximately the same amount in terms of GDP on the healthcare sector. So government contributes to 4% of GDP in health, and so does the private sector, which tells us that, government is spending 4% of GDP on 84% of the population, whereas the private sector is spending the same amount for only 16% of the population. So there's a large gap in funding between the private and the public healthcare sector. According to the Minister Joe Patla, there were 18,804 vacant posts for doctors, nurses, and medical care personnel as of February 2020. This means that the departments are only achieving 31% of their target in the filling of vacant posts. So there's a huge gap there as well. The minister has noted that the main reason for the vacant posts is are the budget cuts, which we've previously noted as being significant and significantly impacting healthcare funding and what we have in our sector. But it's also important to note that even if all the posts are filled today, all 18,000 posts are filled today, South Africa would still have a low health personnel to patient ratio. So we know that we've only got one nurse per 218 patients, whereas the ideal ratio is one nurse per 16 patients. And we also have less than one doctor per 1,000 patients in South Africa. We also note here that primary health care has remained inadequate and has deteriorated. Of course, South Africa introduced the Ideal Clinic program. However, we saw that there's been a regression in the number of clinics that are achieving the Ideal Clinic status. Healthcare in South Africa has to be understood through an intersectional lens, which seeks to understand how different people or different populations in South Africa are able to access healthcare. We know that South Africa is a quadruple burden of disease, and this is obviously characterized by HIV and AIDS-related diseases such as TB, sexually transmitted infections. We've also got maternal and child morbidity and mortality. We're not doing well in that sector. I'll talk more to this in the next slide. Non-communicable diseases are also another element of this quadruple burden, as well as violence, injuries, and trauma. And of course, this quadruple burden does put immense burden on healthcare services. Socioeconomic conditions in South Africa create significant obstacles to preventative care. And this is to say that the healthcare sector is dependent on other expenditure. So for example, we know that when populations are more educated, they're able to take care of themselves in particular ways which improve healthcare outcomes. We know that in South Africa, majority of people choose first to go to public clinics. So 71.9% of households go first to public institutions or clinics, hospitals and public institutions when seeking care. So that is the majority. And as we know, obviously, 84% of the population is dependent on public healthcare system. We also know that the public health facilities are least common in the Western Cape, which also correlates with the high numbers of people who are on medical aid in the Western Cape. And of course, in the poorer provinces, the use of public healthcare facilities is higher. In terms of the medical scheme membership, it's changed very little between 2002 and 2021, increasing only slightly from 15.9% to 16.1%. So even though we see that the public healthcare system remains stretched, we're not seeing significant numbers of people moving into private medical scheme contributions. So it's very important to understand the great needs that there are. And of course, there are racialized differences. White people, of course, have access to medical schemes versus, of course, Black and colored populations. We know that COVID-19 has slightly reduced life expectancy in South Africa. It has recovered a bit as of 2022. The life expectancy for females remains disproportionately higher than male life expectancy. And part of this is attributed to the HIV and AIDS pandemic in South Africa in the past. We also know that the life expectancy is different between different provinces. The Western Cape continues to have a higher life expectancy at birth for both males and females. So important to note there, but also again, keeping in mind the high levels of private medical access and the access to health generally. And we also know that HIV prevalence remains quite high in South Africa. as we've noted before, as the PBO, this South Africa is regressing in its targets for infant mortality rates and for under five mortality rate. And so these numbers have actually increased. So we saw an increase between 2019 and 2021 in the number of children who are dying at infancy and the number of children who are under five. There's also a significant burden of malnutrition in South Africa, which of course worsens the health outcomes, particularly of children and over their lifetimes. And so these are significant concerns that the PBO has raised, that we will not be able to reach our MTSF targets and in fact the National Development Plan targets if these things are not dealt with. And in terms of budget allocations trends, which we usually present, before we get to that, I think members are broadly familiar with how healthcare is funded between the national spheres and the provincial spheres and the equitable share formulas. So we know that the amount of money, and in the next slide, I'll actually show visually. So here's more the content, but let me move here to kind of explain it using this graphic. So we know that, of course, there's total non-interest allocations, and some of those go to the national and some go to provincial and local. And out of the national, the healthcare vote gets 5.6%. And from there, majority of that actually goes to health conditional grants. And some of the money, of course, slightly less than 10% goes to the National Department of Health. In terms of provincial, the provincial equitable share, health only gets 33.6%. And of course, as we know that provinces get to, they do get the money based on the equitable share formula, but it's up to provinces ultimately how they allocate the funding. But we also know that provincial conditional grants get 18.3% from the provincial, and health conditional grants are about 42.5% of the provincial conditional grants. We've noted in the past that real per capita expenditure on health has been has slowly increased in the past, but is declining in the medium term, which is a real concern. We've noted before that per South African will be spending less on health on them in 2025-26 projected as we were in 2016-17, which is a great concern given that we've gone through COVID-19, and there's a real recognition that healthcare expenditure and investment is important. So these are some of the issues that we've raised. And of course, relative to the private sector, South Africa here, we're spending about 3,151 projected in 2025-26, whereas the private healthcare sector spends over 20,000 rand per person. I'll pass over to my next colleague, Tebo.
Thank you very much, Lucy. Chairperson, honorable members, I'll be taking you through the next couple of slides on the actual underspending trends and analysis. And perhaps a good place to start is to explain the methodology that we employed. So we adopted a mixed method approach, which encompasses both quantitative and qualitative data in order to help us assess the extent to which there's been underspending in government health departments. We source data at a program as well as an economic classification level for national government departments, and we did so using the estimates of national expenditure that's published by National Treasury as part of the budget documents. And the analysis essentially seeks to calculate the budget deviation by comparing the adjusted appropriations to the audited expenditure outcomes over a 10-year period, effectively between the fiscal years 2011-12 and 2020-2021. Honorable members, these budget deviations were then calculated as a percentage of the total adjusted appropriations in order to help us assess the level of underspending. Chairperson, I think it's also important to mention that our analysis focused on underspending that was larger than 2% of the budget allocation. And the assumption here is that we acknowledge that it's normal for government to have some level of underspending due to unforeseen circumstances. Furthermore, I think our thinking was also guided by Section 16 of the PFMA, which makes provision for the Minister of Finance to approve overspending not exceeding 2% of a department's total annual budget. Therefore, our analysis seeks to apply this 2% threshold to the lower bound underspend, which we consider a reasonable deviation. Now, once we've established the spending or the understanding trends, department annual reports were analyzed in order to gather and collate information on some of the reasons for underspending both at the national and provincial level. Honorable members, I think given the project's high turnaround time at the provincial level, the PBO assessed the Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, as well as the Western Cape, and the justification here being that sample size constitutes 4 out of 9 provinces in the country, but most importantly, reflects the rural-urban divide, as well as the diversity in the equitable shared distribution amongst the provinces in the country. Moreover, we believe that we also chose these provinces to also take into account the differences in the budget and performance outcomes across provinces. As I conclude the methodology section, Chairperson, I think we'd also like to caution that the analysis that's contained in the understanding brief that we're presenting here today does not reflect the quality of spending or the compliance standards. It simply looks at the level of spending. And I think we all aware of the numerous cautions by the Auditor General highlighting the need for more clean audits, particularly in the health portfolio. Next slide, please. Now, looking at the spending at national level, we do see that between 2011-12 and 2020-21, the National Department of Health underspent its budget by an average of 0.9% annually, and underspending was higher than 2% only in the fiscal years 2013-14 as well as 14-15. And when we look at spending at the program level, we do see that underspending was mainly driven by the hospital systems program, especially when you look at 2015-16 as well as 16-17, where the department underspent its budget by 6.9% and 7.1% respectively. And we've highlighted that in the bold red in the table. Next slide, please. In terms of spending by economic classification, we do see that underspending by the department was mainly driven by current payment. Yes?
Don't move too fast, ne? Move too fast so members can go forward with you, ne?
Okay, no problem.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. So speaking about economic classification, we do see that underspending by the department was driven by current payments as well as payment for capital assets. And in 2013-14 as well as the 2014-15 financial year, we do see that there was underspending in the buildings as well as under other fixed structures. However, we also note that the overspending that we see in subsequent years does not make up for the underspending in the previous period. Next slide, please. So in terms of the reasons for underspending at the national level, and these are reasons that we gathered from the annual reports, the department cites issues around supply chain management problems, in particular as it relates to delays in project completion and implementation. There's issues around process delays. For example, the department cites in 2011-12 that there were delays in terms of funding as it relates to the NHI, and these delays are attributed to delays in the legislative processes, which also further delayed the consultation process. Then there's the issue that I think it's quite problematic across a number of departments is the issue of the compensation of employees, the vacant posts that are not being filled in the number of programs, especially in a department like health, where Busi outlined some of the shortages that we see from a staff complement point of view. There's the issues around the non-implementation of programs and likewise the delays associated with the implementation of new programs by departments. For example, the department alludes to delays when it tried to implement the HPV grant as well as the medical stock system. Then there's the issues as well that relate to the transfers of funds to other entities that may be assisting the department in terms of executing its mandate. In this case, the department citing delays in terms of not being able to make the transfers to NPOs on time due to delays in the non-completion of the service level agreements before the end of the fiscal year. Finally, one of the reasons that was also cited was the hurdles that the department faces in terms of delays, in terms of negotiating additional funds with the provincial treasury and the national treasury, and thus would relate to the South African Demographic and Health Survey. Chairperson, I do think, or our view, that it seems as if all of the factors that are cited by the department are somewhat the function of poor planning. Next slide, please. So in terms of the provincial analysis at the program, provincial level rather, we do note that understanding generally falls below the 2% threshold within our sample. And we do see that it's only in 2013-14 that the provinces Gauteng and Free State recorded underspending that was higher than 2%. Next slide, please. Then some of the reasons that were provided in terms of the underspending in the provincial health departments include, for example, the provision, making provision for medical legal claims. Eastern Cape in particular said that they had to set aside funds to ensure that they are able to make provision for medical legal claims, which I think when you do a long-term analysis of the trends of legal claims, you do see those on an upward trajectory. And perhaps part of the challenges that we see in terms of the excessive legal claims that we see could be indicative of some of the constraints and the shortages that we see in the medical system. Likewise, the department mentioned issues around cash flow problems, which results in the non-processing of payments and the non-payment of suppliers and having to ask for rollovers in order to fulfill these payments in the next financial year. The department equally cites increased that they were able to incur underspending due to increased efficiency, and thus was the Free State and Western Cape in particular, which attributed the underspending to the implementation of efficiency and cost containment measures in the department. Finally, and I think also a big major issue that comes across in most of the underspending work that we conducted is this dependency or the interdepartmental projects or the dependency that's required between government departments in order to deliver services and make payments. I think top of mind for all of us would be the public works as well as the CETA. We know that public works as the custodian of infrastructure, departments do need public works to be able to implement some of those infrastructure projects. Likewise, CETA as it relates to the acquisition of computer services. I'll leave it there. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Good morning, honorable members. Thank you, Tepo. I'll be taking you through the conditional grant for health, which the next slide, Busi. This slide shows that the conditional grant for health, we're speaking about the more than 40% of the total health conditional grant. This is allocated to health. So this table shows that the TB, HIV, malaria, and community outreach and National Tertiary Service Grant are the largest conditional grant combined. They account for more than 70% of the health conditional grant. When you look into the TB, HIV, malaria, and community outreach health conditional grant, it shows that there was a huge jump in terms of the conditional grant allocation in 2021, 2022, and 2023. There was due also to the allocation of the COVID-19. But when you look into the last column, it shows that all the conditional grants, they increase over time, which the largest or the fastest growing is the National Health Insurance Grant. And the annual average allocation growth rate is between 2.5 and 17.2%. Next slide, please. following the same method that was outlined by TSEPO in terms of going about the underspending in the Department of Health, we follow the same approach with the health conditional grant, where we're looking at the adjusted budget against the outcome over the years of our analysis. This is what we have identified with regard to the conditional grant, that there is no particular pattern in terms of underspending, as we can see in this table. The red font text indicates the overspending that is above 0.1%. And also, this is also true because that the department are able to request for rollovers of the unspent budget of the conditional grant. Hence, in most cases, they don't underspend this budget, or it's reflected as if there is no underspending when they are able to request for rollovers. And lastly, is that we've seen that there is a shifting amongst the conditional grant, a reprioritization within the grant, which happened between the year 2017-2018, 2018-2019. There was between the health professional trainings and development grant, the national tertiary service grant, and the health facility revitalization grant. So there were shifting that happened between those three grants. Those are the analysis that we can come up with in terms of the spending trends of the conditional grant within the health department. Next slide. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Sipe. Next slide, please. So, members, the following few slides are from an assessment done in 2020 on the performance of conditional grants in 2019. The purpose was to determine the performance on conditional grants, but also to identify shortcomings or constraints that might influence the efficiency or effectiveness of conditional grants. To mention is that we are in a process to update the assessments done in 2020 with the latest available performance information on all the grants that will also give us an indication of performance over time. Next slide. Some of the findings on conditional grants showed that a relative small underspending in the National Tertiary Services grant due to the delays in delivery of equipment, but a rollover was requested in 2019-20. All performance outputs have exceeded the targets. So you will see there was a small underspending, but the targets have been exceeded. To increase equitable access to tertiary services across the country, a developmental allocation within the grant was introduced from 2020-21. This developmental allocation is expected to reduce patient referrals to other provinces by bringing tertiary services closer to the patients in provinces where these services are relatively underdeveloped, such as in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. In terms of the HIV-TB and community outreach grant, underspending of 0.8% was found in 2019-20, but there was also underperformance on the TB and HIV malaria targets at that stage. Next slide. In terms of the health facility revitalization grant, underspending of 3% of the transferred amount was reflected, and only 3 or 5 planned new facilities were completed due to poor performance, which caused delays in completion of some capital projects. The department indicated that additional regular monitoring and oversight tools will be implemented to ensure adequate project execution. In terms of the NHI grant, with regards to health facilities, there was underspending of 22% at that stage on the original budget allocated for the NHI grant, and that was caused by invoices that were received late. The conditional grant also underperformed, so the underspending and underperformance correlates. The underperformance was on the completion of new facilities. 2 of 6 were completed. Facilities maintained, 39 of 45 were only maintained, and only 2 of the planned 10 facilities were upgraded or renovated and refurbished in 2019-20. Next slide. In terms of the health profession training and development grant, almost the full transfer demand for the conditional grant was spent. The recruitment of specialists and other staff was very slow at that stage. The reason for the slow recruitment was due to the need to obtain approval from provincial treasuries or premiers in specific provinces. And this is the only grant, members, that I want to note that shows the number of administration staff as an output. So for this specific grant, there was 23 staff just appointed just to administer this grant. Full expenditure without performance sometimes raises questions about the credibility of the budget and whether there was efficient expenditure of the funds. So if such a relatively small grant with only four outputs requires 23 administrative staff members, other conditional grants might then require much more, but we don't know because it's not reflected in terms of their outputs. The cost of administration should play a crucial role in structuring the funding of a sector and specifically in terms of grants. In an effort to improve efficiency, the department merged the HPTD grant with the Human Resource Capacitation Grant in 2020. That might also assist with being more efficient. The training component is focused mainly on recruiting registrars, although other categories are still funded. Next slide. In terms of the human papillomavirus, in 2019, there was underspending of 19% on the original budget allocated for this grant. The planned vaccination of 80% of 19-year-olds was almost met, and this conditional grant has been merged with the HIV, TB, malaria and community outreach grant, which will also assist with the efficiency and effectiveness of this proportion of the bigger grant. The NHI grant, the personal services component, in 2019, the department spent 13% of the budget. No district level observations for physician services, clinical psychological services and forensic mental services were provided at that stage. There was no spending on general practitioner contracting. The reason given for not contracting private health professionals was non-compliance of health professionals to supply chain management requirements. So obviously there are strict requirements for healthcare services for practitioners to be able to participate in this program. A capacitation model was ever developed but was not implemented due to the capacity challenges to implement the reimbursement model. In future, the contracting of health professionals will be decentralized to the provincial departments of health. The updated assessment that I've indicated that we are busy with will provide us or will show any improvement due to these changes that has been made to the grants. Next slide. In terms of the NHI insurance grant, the non-personal services component, the department has spent 64% of the original budget allocated for this conditional grant, and the department performed or overperformed on the planned outputs. So there was a mixed performance on the different outputs set. The Human Resource Capacitation Grant, which is now merged with our Health Profession Training and Development Grant, over expenditure as well as overperformance on this conditional grant was due to the statutory obligations to place medical interns for completion on their studies. Next slide. Thank you, members. I will hand over to the next presenter.
Thank you. I'm here back again to talk about some key considerations for interventions to redress underspending. So the ATSA has recently released its report, and some of their findings, complement the work that we've done. So the ATSA notes that the financial health of the healthcare sector has come under immense pressure for years because of limited budget and poor financial management. And the limited budget component is what we've raised with regards to real per capita spending. And in fact, the National Treasury did admit in 2021 that some of the budget cuts that happened do reduce the efficiency of some of the programs. So that's something to think about and take seriously. And of course, medical negligence continues to be a huge issue in the sector. Malpractice claims continue to increase, and total claims against the sector currently stand at 103.64 billion, which is a significant amount of money that is coming out from the health budgets to deal with these claims. But importantly, the AGSA has also highlighted the need for the sector or healthcare sector or hospitals and the departments to pay specific attention to medical record keeping, because one of the things that has been happening is that claims are not being paid. And when claims are not being paid, interest is garnered on those claims. And so the final payments actually increase over time. So when these claims are not being processed, it means further and increased costs in the future. The healthcare sector or the health sector departments wise from the public sector's component continues to be one of the biggest contributors to unauthorized expenditure. And so we've noted that our analysis on spending trends did not necessarily look at the quality of spend. And so here the AGSA is noting that, you know, there are some compliance issues, and these are of course things that we should look to the AGSA to take note of. And so provincial health and education departments, unfortunately, the numbers came combined, so that these two sectors are responsible for 2.83 billion out of 3.21 billion, which is a significant amount of money, or the majority, in unauthorized expenditure in 2020-2021. And even though the healthcare sector and departments have made some progress, you know, they've put in some sector controls, but we haven't seen significant change and improvement in terms of financial management on that end. What we find from our annual reports analysis can be summarized into these categories to really say that these are the areas that need to be focused on. The one is procurement. There continues to be complex procurement processes. And so one of the things that we need to think about is really how do we ensure that we are implementing best practices of supply chain management systems. And one of the things that emerges a lot is the delays in payments. So those are some of the things that we need to think about. Payment systems is the next one. And in this case, we know that National Treasury has a regulation that creditors must be settled within 30 days from receipt of invoice. And of course, the members here have raised this before. How do we improve this? But this is one of the areas that we really need to look at, because at the end of the year, when these sectors are being audited and payments are outstanding, of course, it leads to some of the bad outcomes, audit outcomes particularly. Vacancies, Tebo and myself earlier in the presentation, we've spoken about this, the need to fill the vacancies is important, particularly in areas where those vacancies that are not filled have to do with the implementation of the budget itself on programs. So that's very important that those are filled. And in some cases, the underspending is a result of course, unfilled vacancies, particularly in health. As we know earlier, there are 18,000 vacant posts. Interdepartmental systems, Tebo spoke about this as well, in terms of the reasons. And compliance is something that we must also focus on, particularly with conditional grants. And lastly, project planning. What was raised is that there's inadequate needs assessments. So this is also another area where we need to think about, is enough budget being allocated? Is the budget being spent in the ways that it should? And sometimes underspending is a result of not enough money being allocated to begin with. Next, I'll hand over to our director to give the concluding remarks.
Colleagues, Chair and members, just quick summary. I think our analysis does show, this longitudinal analysis does show that over a period of 10 years, there is indeed been underspending in the national department, but average 0.9% annually. And also the provincial level for those provinces that we've looked at, there has been a trend of underspend of just below 2% in this regard. And some of the reasons that we note, the chair members and colleagues really highlight the systematic issues that in our view require intervention from various oversight bodies in this regard. You know, issues around procurement problems, lack of capable and skilled officials in critical areas of government functions, the issues around compliance and also project planning, and so many other matters that we've raised. The adequacy of the budget is also an important consideration in thinking about the underspending or trying to contextualize underspending, particularly as we see that there isn't really a large scale of underspending as it at times gets reported. The reality is that we're concerned that actually the spending per capita in health sector, function of government, actually have been declining over time, and we see that it's declining also over time. It's a very concerning issue when you look at how much the need is arising. If losses were made available, there could be significant more much need for health care functions particularly. And also, we see that in other areas, there's issues where the money has been spent, but actually there isn't much of the performance being very correlated with such money spent. It's a very key issue that we are concerned about, and we want to raise to the committee in this regard. And next slide. I think we also do know that the issue of over-budgeting as well has not been widespread as perceived. So in one particular instance in 2020, where Western Cape province, they've indicated over budget for a particular program in the regard and not as widely expected. We're also concerned that generally we see that conditional grants analysis, that delivery of health infrastructure projects remains one of the biggest failures in the sector over time, where there's been drag or there hasn't been realization of some of these infrastructure projects in particular. Information systems for controlling stocks, managing dispensing, registration of patients, and so many other are not fully operational within the sector, which also, again, this links back to the infrastructure in this regard. We also found that the duplication of funding for same purposes or outputs within the conditional grants framework, which raises questions of planning and strategic alignment in particular as well. The departments indicate that the funding structure of the health sector will only be reconfigured once the NHI bill is enacted. One of the central aspects of the bill is the establishment of the fund as public entity and should not be the cause for not improving the current funding structure, infrastructure, and human resource capacity to provide proper health care. Chair, members, and colleagues, thank you so much. I think we're going to stop there, pause there, and give that two additional slides just for further information from us. Thank you so much for the opportunity in this regard. Thank you, sir. We are done. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I thought Honorable Karim will take over. Maybe still busy with something. Thank you so much, Team PDO.
Chairperson. Sorry.
Yes.
Did you say I'm supposed to take over?
Yes, I sent you a WhatsApp.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Sorry. All right, I'll take over then. Sorry, I don't see the WhatsApp. It's always useful to send me a missed call because, I don't get these pips on the WhatsApp because the whole day it's ping, ping, ping. All right, fine, let's go ahead. Okay, whose hands are up? Help me, please, Lubabalo. There's Mark Bletcher. Who would Mark Bletcher be? Sorry, I'm not sure. I know him. Is he an MP? MPL?
Morning, Chair. Now from National Treasury.
All right. Normally, I don't know what the procedure here is, Dovalo. Is Treasury meant to make a submission?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there is nothing stopping the committee to give an opportunity to National Treasury if they have got something to say. It might happen that it's something that will...
I know that. Yeah, I know that. I'm just asking what I haven't, because I wasn't briefed before and that I got a chair. It's just sprung on me now. I'm not complaining. I don't know what, are they formally on the agenda? Because I looked at the agenda last night. Item on the agenda. That's what I was. No. Yeah, it's fine. Okay, so they're not being given 15 minutes or whatever. Oh, no, okay, right, fine. No problem in having him. I know that. I just want to know whether they formally meant to make an input. All right, good. I'll try to locate the agenda. I just looked at it yesterday, obviously, as an ordinary member. I didn't take it that I would have to chair, but I do. It's fine. Let's go ahead. Where are we, Mark? You want to say something?
Hello, Mark.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just be extremely brief. We do welcome the report. I just wanted to, you know, continue to alert members of the committee that the situation with provincial health department funding this year is quite a lot of concern. And it arises particularly from the reductions in budgets that follow the economic shortfall after COVID. So from the budgets allocated in budget 21, which had reductions which escalated and reached their peak in the current financial year 23-24, but those baselines go through to 24-25. So as we speak, there is around a 11.2 billion real decline in the funding to the 9 provincial health departments this year. And that is compounded by the fact that the cost of the wage agreement this year to the provincial health departments is just over 9 billion. And that wage agreement is currently not funded. Now, I think there's a general sense that health and education, because they're really important service sectors, need to be largely excluded from these reductions. But everybody is kind of sidestepping because there's not a kind of clear approach developed yet as to how these budget reductions are going to work and how the funding of the wage agreement is going to work across the different sectors. So I just wanted to point that out, Chair, because there's a fairly severe problem this year that I think the committee needs to keep its eyes on. With respect to historical national versus provincial underspending, there has been underspending, particularly in the national department. The 0.9% figure presented by the PBO is a little bit misleading because the national department transfers most of its funds to provinces, and it's very easy to do the transferring. So a better reflection is the spending of the national department on its own core budget, particularly on its goods items. And there has been a several hundred million underspending in the National Department of Health for several years. Also on their donor funding, quite substantial underspending on donor funding. But in general, on the provinces, although there are some exceptions that the committee has that the PBO has pointed out, the pressure on the provincial health departments has really been, you know, very, very substantial, and particularly in this year. In fact, although there is, for example, sometimes a little bit of underspending, that goes with fairly substantial accruals. So a lot of the provinces, particularly a province like Eastern Cape, is entering each financial year with large numbers of unpaid bills, which put pressure on their budget in the early months of the year. And in many of the provinces, and to some extent some of the national programs, there are also quite substantial management problems at present. And the combination in the provinces of budgetary shortfalls, along with quite a lot of management weaknesses, there's still a lot of problems of HODs and CFO rotation, where people have only been there for very short time periods. It means that the kind of two aggravate each other, because to cope with a tight budget, one needs a very strong management. And the combination of, in a sense, risky budgets and not terribly strong management teams in some cases is a difficult situation. So this is a sector that's going to need a lot of attention, Chairperson, in the period ahead. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, the hands that are up are Fani and Dennis that I saw last. That's it. I don't see any other hands up. Yes, Fani and Dennis.
Thank you, Chair. I believe the Honourable Ryder had his hand up before me. He can proceed.
Does it matter? Does it matter?
Okay, Chair. Chair, I think the short and the long is this is not a surprise that there's been underspending and is underspending in the health sector and has been for quite a few years now. And the fact that the NHI has been approved in the National Assembly and the figures that we see here is just basically exclaims the fact that the national health insurance is not going to work. Our health sector is not up to scratch. I don't know if you maybe that the troubled you had a view or had a look at the legal opinion of the Freedom From Plus, which we handed in the National Assembly's committee or the health committee on specifically on the NHI, where it stipulates that there are serious legitimate concerns with regards to this bill. And I mean, if it's all right with you, Chair, I can share it with the committee in the chat to go and peruse at their own leisure and convenience, and just to take note of all the loopholes that there currently is and the dangers that this definitely holds for governments and for the health sector as a whole. Jen, if we go to the presentation, I just want to draw to the screen. What was mentioned was by the PBL on the National Health Insurance Grant Personal Services Components, and if I can maybe have a little bit more information on that, they said that the department spent 13% of its budget, no district level observations for psychiatric services, clinical psychological services and forensic mental services were provided. And then important, there was no spending on general practitioner contracting. The reason given for not contracting private health professionals was non-compliance of health professionals to supply chain management requirements. Now, I want to know if race played a role with this. Chair, if people were not allowed to participate in the health sector because they didn't have the required BEE status, if we could please have clarity on that. And then if there's time later on, I will have a second bite. Thank you, Chair.
Dennis, you know you're next.
Thanks very much, Chair. Yeah, look, I agree with Barney. I think that one of the biggest arguments against NHI would be this presentation. But, you know, let's fight that battle at a later stage, perhaps. But I think that it's very useful to add this particular string to our bow. On the presentation, PBI, thanks very much. I think it was a nice initiative, and that's meaningful and useful to us as the Appropriations Committee. I do think the figures are a little bit out of date. And, you know, we're dealing with 2021 figures. We haven't got 2021-22 figures in there. And I mean, as Mark pointed out, Treasury has the year-to-dates as well. So the figures are a little bit out of date. And I think that may skew a little bit of the info that we're extracting out of it, particularly because, you know, we can best react to things that are happening now, and we can deal with the signals that are happening now and call people in, perhaps, if it's necessary to give an account based on what the current situation is. So the underspending analysis actually showed some very positive trends. You know, I think the Eastern Cape maybe is the one that stood out as falling a little bit short in terms of the spending capabilities. But also, we didn't have all of the provinces listed that I could see. So perhaps a bit more info on that would be useful, but I presume that, you know, if there was something to worry about, it would be highlighted. So, you know, I'm not sure if we need to bring the Eastern Cape in. I just saw that there was a sudden jump in 1 year. I don't know if that's because they suddenly couldn't, or their purchase of the scooter ambulances was prevented, or what the story is there. But, you know, if that's been a sustained issue, perhaps we as a committee need to call the Eastern Cape Health Department and hear what their challenges are and what's causing the underspending. The most worrying comment on underspending was the one not in the presentation, but that Mark from Treasury gave us, the fact that donor funding is not being spent. That's damn scary. I mean, if you get a gift and you don't use it, that's really not, that's not on. If we end up sacrificing donor funding, in a country where, you know, clearly there is so much need on a health basis, that really is concerning. So I think that's something certainly that we need to watch out for, and perhaps, yeah, get the National Department to account to us on that as well. But, Chair, the conclusion, I think, was the the thing that I wanted to get onto. And so in that last slide, you know, I think that PBO made the point that underspending is not really a big challenge. There is some minor underspending here and there, but the real issue is that there's just not enough money to go around. And I think that is what we as a committee should really take out of it. And Chair, we need to understand, you know, as a committee earlier on, we just approved the appropriation bill. And now we're getting up, the rest of the meeting is a presentation as to exactly the reason why we should not have been approving the appropriation bill in its current format, because our spending is not going to where South Africans need it to be going. Health, safety and security, education, you know, primary basic education is the problem. And so, yeah, again, a real demonstration as to why our appropriations that we're giving are totally skewed, incorrect, and not servicing our countrymen. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, next is Simon Moletsane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is more of a comment than a question, because looking on the issue of the vacancies, it is unfair to the citizens of this country about the vacant posts, because it denies them the service delivery. Secondly, it is surprising that the Free State is one of those provinces with 2% underspending on the health budget, while the standard of health department in the Free State is deteriorating in terms of lack of service delivery and the shortage of medications. Thank you, Chairperson.
Anybody else? Lubabalo, I don't see any other hands up. That was Simon.
Okay. So, you know, Bunny, you asked whether you can put the legal opinion on the Freedom Front on the chat. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a legal document. It's not a banned document. So you have the right to do it. But I'm not so sure whether putting a long document in the chat is going to be as valuable as sending it to Lubabalo to send out to members. So I don't see any problem unless the chairperson of the committee does, but obviously the majority in the committee decides. But if she wants to have a view, she can make that known at an appropriate time. Secondly, I haven't read, you asked the chair, I think, have I read it? No, I can't read everything in every portfolio committee. Okay, funny you say you email it. Yeah, it's put it to email documents. Well, I don't know. Young people read 40-page documents on a cell phone. So I'm 67, so maybe it's just about people of my age. So look, firstly, in a way, it's relevant what you and Dennis says. But as Dennis says, it's another string to the bow. Strictly, it's not entirely relevant, but yes, to the broader issue of NHR. Now that we've got where we have about NHI, I feel I have to say something. You know, I mean, in fairness, presenting the ANC point of view, but also my own, which is fairly consistent. Look, we've discussed this before. I don't want to make a long speech, okay? But PBO might want to comment on some of the things. They're not questions. The way I see it, and I'm fine if people don't agree, and there's no reason why you should agree, you know, a mark of a civilized society is free education and free health, really. Or equal education and equal health. You can't, you know, have a two-tier system in health. It's a basic need. It's like water, electricity, and the like. And when you look at what the, just Google it, colleagues, just Google it, okay? The profits that the hospitals, private sector hospitals make. And I agree that the public sector hospitals, glaring, it's stark. It's like so obvious that it would be stupid for anybody to deny it. The public sector hospitals are in a seriously challenged situation. to put it mildly. Part of this is our own failure of oversight as parliament and legislatures in particular, because it's the provincial legislature that also have a key role. Partly it's government, partly it's the civil service, and partly it's the looting. If you look at what's going on in the Gauteng hospitals that are in the newspapers, I really think it's like obscene what is going on here. And the incapacity of the police and the prosecution services to act swiftly against the culprits. Sometimes they're well known, but you know, it takes endless months to even get them before the courts and another set of endless months before they even reach some conclusion on the outcome. And often the case falls away for some other reason. So I don't think there's any view in the ANC, I can't speak for everybody, but that it's going to happen overnight, that it's costly, that the public sector is in a crisis. Nobody wants to destroy the private sector hospitals. Nobody wants to bring to a halt the services offered by those people, some of whom I know personally, and I know the services that are free of charge, certainly in my hometown of Shindusi. There's about five of them who give a lot to public sector hospitals, but also privately to free services for people who are indigent. So, you know, the other thing is we're obviously aware that the doctors in our country, given our standards of training, are globally mobile. I saw the other day, colleagues, that even teachers are being recruited to go to the UK now. So, you know, there is a desperation in certain sectors. But you see, it's not whether we have an NHI. It's how and over what time and how we integrate the two systems in such a way that we don't destroy either. Even further in the one case, the public sector and the private sector. That's the issue really. We can't carry on like this, colleagues. It's a question of how and when, and we require all the skills we do, partly in the Department of Health, and the government as a whole needs to be more sensitive to drawing in more skills from the private sector to assist in the NHI. So I don't think we're a long debate about the NHI. The other thing to raise, I don't think we should discuss some of these issues without the health portfolio being here. It's very hard, I know, the Babalo and the chair of the committee, to bring committees together. But we're not experts in this area. We're not sufficiently clued up on what's going on here in this sector and the NHI. It's a committee, and they'll be processing that bill. So I think at some stage, both appropriations and health should meet together. And because it's such a key issue, maybe once a year. Because if we're serious about implementing the NHI, Comrade Dikeledi, maybe once a year we can slide in a meeting. But for now, I'll just pass and hand over to, and Mark, you must please come in. You are Treasury, right, Mark? So we don't have a health official yet. Do we, Tumabala? Do we have anybody from the health department?
No, Chairperson, we don't have health representatives.
Yeah, you invited them, yeah. You see, sometimes you can't bring those committees, yeah, because they're probably sitting with 1,000 things before them. But we should persist. We should persist, even contact the minister, the chairperson. Okay, we've done that before. And, you know, harass the DGs. They must send somebody. Yeah, surely there's some person they could have sent here. So it helps even if the committee is not here. All right, over then to you, Dimasani and your team, and then Mark, you can come in whenever you want.
Oh, thank you so much, Chairperson and members and colleagues. I think I want to start my response by highlighting that there's a huge concerns around the disconnect between the budget process and the government service delivery mechanism. And that's in our view, that has to be addressed in a very high level, because you can't have budget being reduced whereas the outcomes are declining. It doesn't make any sense, at least in what we've been raising over time, over the years, that really shows the disconnect between the budget process and the service delivery process in a sense, in a really broad scheme of things. And really, that's needs to be addressed, Chair and members. And that's really a sentiment that we're pushing also with the numbers, with the evidence that we're raising, showing that, you know, we've seen that there is a decline in outcomes of healthcare, yet we see budget being reduced in these particular functions and so on. More so that, in our previous reports and presentations, we've raised concerns that actually some of the reductions lacks no economic or social sense in them, because they're not backed by any evidence that will lead to better budget outcomes or any economic development outcomes and so on. And we are concerned, around that. And hence I emphasized earlier on that the concerns we often have is that this budget underspending it's going to be used as a way of reducing spending in some of these important functions of government. And that's really the message that we want to take out to say, look, we've raised this concern over time that reducing budget in some of the key areas without any evidence that would lead to better budget outcomes is a worrying issue. And we think Parliament takes into account is a very, very concerned, as a very serious issue for oversight in particular. And really, that's the one I want to start to explain that. That disconnect between the budget process and the service delivery has to be closed at high level somehow. Otherwise, we're not going to deal with some of the many social and economic issues that we have in that regard. And really, we do emphasize the issues of efficiency and so many, but I think the correct things of that there is clear evidence of divergence between the budget planning and service delivery outcomes in that regard. We do welcome, Chair, the comments, the inputs from the National Treasury, and we have been asking for a meeting with the National Treasury for many years now. We are happy that they're coming in. We still request that meeting, in particular, in more systematic way. You know, we shouldn't just come in here and just comment. Let's have a very good meeting where we understand each other where we come from. But we do welcome that input. My wish is this inputs be more systematic, also more strategic as well. The issue around outdated numbers, outdated dates, Chair and members, those are actually sober numbers you can have in a sense that, what happened post 2020, we expect the numbers to be different in most significant way. As we hear Mark say that there are more sharper decline in spending in some of these areas post that time, which we haven't looked at. So we were deliberately looking at those numbers. But I think the idea was to really provide a sense in a more clear, sober time where there wasn't any shock in the system, any shock in the public finances. We want to provide that clarity in terms of what is really happening in the spending in these particular areas. So I think that's really, I want to start to give that overview and message. And I want to give Dr. Lan to start by giving response, and then Busi, Secretary and Sepo will come in later as well. Dr. Alan, do you want to start while I look at my notes here? Thank you so much, Shannon.
Dr. Vasali, can you manage your team instead of me interrupting things next and so on? Right?
Good. Thank you so much. Dr. Alan?
Thank you, Dumisani. I don't have much to say. It's just in terms of the supply chain management, the reason that was provided in the annual report that time. I think Mark Bletcher is really the champion for many, many years now in the health sector. Perhaps he's got a more detailed answer on the reasons or the detail on the supply chain management. And then the other one also, in terms of Tumisani just answered in terms of the outdated data. Members, I just want to indicate or you to note that this whole project started off by, it was just based on underspending, but we've included the information that we had on the performance, what we had and what we did before. But as I said, currently, as we are sitting here, our analysts are updating those numbers, and we will provide you with a brief as soon as possible with the 21-22 performance information on the conditional grants, because those are the latest audited numbers in terms of the performance information. So at this stage, you won't get audited performance information for 22-23, but we will provide you with the information that was presented in the annual report of the National Department. Thank you.
Busi, do you want to come in?
Yes, thank you. I first wanted to comment in terms of the time frame that we've picked. One of the things about our methodology
methodological approach was that we were trying to understand as our directors noted, the longitudinal trends. And why that was important was because when we looked at the annual reports, then we were able to pick out the reasons for underspending that were systematic. And that was part of our methodology to say, what are the reoccurring issues in the sector? And in fact, obviously in the last 3 years or 2 years or so, they wouldn't have significantly changed, right? So the idea of vacant posts is a continuous reoccurring issue, which begins in about 2014-15. And it's important to acknowledge when an issue begins to arise and how it continues to increase over time. So that was part of the logic from a methodological perspective. In terms of the numbers, there's been a question here raised around, the numbers being understated, not considering donor funds. I think from a methodology perspective as well, what we did is that we calculated the budget deviation by comparing the adjusted appropriations to the audited expenditure outcomes. So that was our methodological approach. And so that is what is applied. And so I understand the questions that are being raised that are above and beyond, but it's important to contextualize which numbers we were using and why we were using those particular numbers. And so another way that this could have been done is that we could have compared the main appropriation versus the audited outcome, but we believed that the adjusted was more appropriate in terms of really assessing. Because if you take the main appropriation, you might actually get overstated numbers because what's the purpose of adjustments is really to take into account the context and all the other things that have happened in between the budget and the MTBPS itself. And there was also a statement around, I've lost my notes here, but just really to say, I think in terms of the NHI, and I won't speak too much about this, I think there are a lot more clarity questions that still need to be answered. But really, I think our assessment is really showing that not adequately budgeting does lead to more problems than adequately budgeting. And so one example is that in the AGSA report, they show that 100% of money was spent on a vaccination program. However, the outcome, in terms of their outcome, they only achieved less than half of what was actually the outcome, even though 100% had been spent. And so in that situation, the questions that we need to be asking are, was the money not enough to begin with? So even if you spent all the money, you didn't even have enough to really vaccinate all those people to begin with, right? So now it looks like an underperformance. But really what the issue is that there wasn't enough money. Or the other question could be, the money was spent not efficiently, and now that's why not all 100% of people. So there are questions that arise from our research or questions that need to be further unpacked, but really the purpose was really to show the trends and understanding and to really emphasize that, you know, as much as we speak about understanding, it is not as exaggerated as it has been made to be, and that is a critical finding. And to also say that on the other side of the coin, when members do look at these slides, the other thing one can also look at is the overspending as the other side of the coin, which is also something to take into account.
Tepo, thank you, Busi. Tepo, do you want to come in?
I'll be quite brief, and perhaps to avoid just waxing lyrical, Dr. DJ, but just to emphasize that we do see this work as a foundation and will certainly updated on an ongoing basis. And I think given that we've got Mark on the platform, we'll certainly reach out to him to grant us access to the most recent data. We have struggled in the past in getting access to this data via the National Treasury officials. And I think it's important and critical that the committee is able to get access to this data and this analysis to be able to better capacitate them in terms of their oversight work. Thank you.
Sipetelo, lastly, before I come in.
All is covered, Dr. DJ.
All right, no, thank you so much. Thanks, colleagues. I think before I give back to you, Chair, one of the points that I actually slipped my mind was what Tepo has just raised now, the issue of access to data to do the work. We've raised it before, and I think we raised it again. Hence, I was saying I welcome the Treasurer's comment. It's always good to have a very strategic engagement.
You muted yourself, I think, or somebody
else. Point, Chair, it relates to...
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Hello?
We can hear you now. Thank you.
All right. I think I'm using your phone, so somebody else is calling me. So the last point I want to talk about is the issue around infrastructure spending. It's a very important area. And I think we've seen in many, we've done various analysis in various.
You're muted again.
This big issue. There was a work done by the current Minister of Electricity now, who was in the presidency around infrastructure. I would really recommend the committee to invite that department or that session in the presidency. It needs to explain what's happening around sorting out the issue around infrastructure spending, generally about government, because we've seen a lot of underspending, money-making way, spending being recorded a lot around infrastructure. So it's very important to get that progress update, what's happening in the presidency around the infrastructure initiatives that have been initiated then. So I'll stop there, and really thank you so much, members, for this opportunity.
Thanks, Masani. Okay, thank you. Mark, do you want to say anything?
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. So, I mean, I do think that given the kind of multitude of problems that exist at the moment, there might be an idea for the committee to consider a joint meeting with the health portfolio committee. I mean, these are really tough times, and even going into budget 24, there are issues of GDP projections being lower than anticipated, revenue is coming in lower than anticipated, and the debt situation is lower than anticipated. So the situation going into the MTBPS is not very strong. And we're sitting in a situation where the provincial equitable share allocations, even for 2023 in real terms, going to provinces are around 20, 30, 40 billion lower than they were pre-COVID. So the provinces are under significant pressure. There's a risk during COVID, quite a lot of additional health posts were filled, around 4,000 doctor posts, 8,000 nurse posts. And there are risks that those may be lost in the period ahead, with this uncertainty also how to handle health and education through the tough period that we're currently going through. There are quite a lot of efficiency issues in the sector have been raised. There are quite a lot of problematic supply chain issues. The housing issues were well raised. The procurement stuff was to some extent under the, or mainly nationally under the office of the OCPO, but some of it is split with transversal tenders run through the health sector. You might want to ask the OCPO to speak to you about the issues, but there were quite a lot of problems in health supply chain issues. So the issue of oversight over the sector is particularly important over the time, at this time, given this kind of coming together of problems in budgetary management and a range of kind of efficiency issues. Back to you, Chair.
Okay, I see two other hands up. I see Dennis and Chitoy.
Thanks very much, Chair. My hand came in reaction to a comment that was made by Dr. Jainkis, and I just wanted to explore it a little bit further. And he said that the PBO has for some time been trying to arrange a meeting with Treasury and has been unsuccessful in doing so. And I find that quite concerning. And I think it's something that we need to just get a little bit of clarity on from Dr. Jainkis, because, you know, frankly, the Moneyball's Amendment Procedure Act, which gave birth to the PBO, specifically includes sub-clause 18 under the PBO clause, which says that any information which the office requires for the performance of its function must be given timeously and free of charge, et cetera, et cetera. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But, you know, if Treasury is not cooperating with the PBO, they're actually hampering our committee in the completion of our work and the tasks before us. So if we can just get some clarity on that, and perhaps if there needs to be an intervention from our side, Chair, and a discussion with National Treasury, some encouragement perhaps to assist the PBO in the fulfillment of their duties. It is a legislative requirement. So I'd like Dr. Jantjies to comment, please.
Well, there's nothing for Dr. Jantjies to comment on. It's a decision. There's nothing to do. I don't know why you're pussyfooting or tiptoeing around it. You must just do it. We've discussed this before. Dumasani can found the chair or myself, depending on which committee the issue arises within. And we will do it. We'll ring Momo and tell him to do it. It's not a debate. As you say, it's a legislative program. Treasury doesn't have a choice. Only if they can prove that there's something that falls under a very sensitive area of the Official Secrets Act, or there's some executive terrain that's being unduly intruded on by the parliament, can they refuse? And they must prove it. Then we send it to our legal resources center. I mean, what legal services, you know, Frank and them. They must tell us whether that's legitimate or not. So there's no, like, discussion about it. There's nothing for Dumasani to say. The only question you might want to answer is, why didn't you raise it with the chairperson of the committee? And she will ring Momo, or she'll ring the minister and sort it out. First, frankly, I haven't come across it before where I have rung Momo, you'll remember, Dumasani, whether you or Jahed were the head. I can't recall twice. It wasn't Momo. Yeah, I rang Momo to fall under his area. And I can't recall, I might have rang Fuzile, and it was done. So yes, there's no question about it. There's no need to have a discussion. We will do it. So you come back to us, and you come back to the chairperson here and do it. And she will act on it, obviously, and it'll be done. So Mark, you might want to say something in reply, but Dumasani, do you want to say anything at all in regard to this? Why didn't you ring the chairperson? It's a question I'd like to ask you and ask her to intervene. You know it's your right.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks, Chair. No, I think we have... sorry. My computer shut down. Sorry, yes. Sorry, Chair. I had a bit of a glitch with the computer.
No problem.
Yes, we have on numerous occasions. Initially, we were also instructed by the finance committees to meet with Sajjad to discuss some of the perspective in different things, particularly around many of the budget issues that we had. And we had subsequently written letters to the DG office and twice. And I think I see Ms. August is here, so we can also vouch for that, where we have written quite many times. We're meeting for really, really have a clear understanding which are the way we come from. And I was quite happy to hear Mark comes in. And hoping that we can follow up on that. We have not gotten any response in engaging with National Treasury because our view is that we want to engage through the office of the DG and then we start engaging with the rest of the colleagues from the department, but we haven't gotten any response. Maybe Cindy can respond to that. Thank you, Chair.
No, can I get some clarity? What are you saying? You mean the times that I phoned in, subsequent to that, nothing happened? Why didn't you come back to me? We can't follow up. We have 1,000 things to do apart from serving this committee, other people. So what happened? No meeting ever occurred in the last 4 years?
No. But we wrote letters. We wrote formally, waiting for a response. We've not gotten a response.
Yes, so, but if you don't get the response, you refer the letter to me. I ring the DG and the minister, and they'll have to do it. Or we hold them before the committee. Why do we do that? Yes, hold them before the committee. So if there's an issue that arises in finance, we just call the minister, instruct them to appear and explain why they won't cooperate. It's the legislative duty. Can Lubabalo, can you minute that? Please. Doesn't matter which chair it is. If Dikile is not well, I will do it, whatever. But she must give me the go-ahead because it's appropriations matter. We will do it, no problem. Mark, you want to say something, please give a reply. Why won't you people cooperate? I'll ring Momo this evening if the lady allows, but I'll leave it to her to get well and decide for herself. But I'm happy to do it. And I'll ring the minister if I don't get cooperation. Within 14 days, I must meet with you. Let's put it down there. Can we put this before the committee that within 14 days, Treasury must agree to meet, send the relevant. I'm not sure that you need a meeting with the DG, please. You can get a meeting on the issues that are preoccupying you with Mark or whoever else Treasury decides to allocate. Well, more than one, hopefully, people to meet with you. It's a Zoom meeting. What's the hassle? They don't apply to Cape Town. Okay, Mark, do you want to say anything quickly, please? Let's not detain ourselves with this issue. It's not an endless discussion here. It's about doing. No, it's about acting.
No, Chair, I was not aware of the problem. But our colleague, Mr. Brain, is on the call. May want to add the...
Fine. Mr. What's his name? Brain. Whoever it is, can you come in?
Juliet Le Brain, who's our head of...
Hi, right. He's the head of the section.
Yeah, no, we are not aware of these letters that the head of the PBO refers to, and we will find out where they are, because there's no issue in sharing the data. There's no issue in sharing information. It's public information.
Exactly. And in fact, so we settled.
Yeah, we settled.
Fine. So within 14 days, you will give them the information and or meet with them. Obviously, Judge Masani, you can't ask for a meeting with the DG over this matter, unless it's a major policy issue and so on, and you want some clarity, which you can write to him. But to be fair to the DG, I know him for thousands of years, right? And I must tell you, he wriggles a bit now and then, but, you know, he does. He does actually do these things. Maybe he was over. I told him it wasn't Fuzile at the time, but none of them had said no. Everybody agrees that to be done. We've raised it in the committee. I think it even, you know what surprises me, Joe? I think this is even in our recommendations in reports. You've got a strong leg to stand on. They have no choice about it. So I don't know what happened to Masani, but you should have come back to me. I mean, I'm not a ninny, Masani. How long you know me now? You think I'm a ninny? I have many weaknesses. I'm not some sort of ninny, right? And I'll certainly address these issues. And it's not a matter of debates, really. We can do this offline. But thanks for raising it, Dennis. Now over then to Fanny.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question wasn't answered with regards to the contracting of private health professionals.
Yes.
To that alleged non-compliance.
No, right, you're right. If yeah.
The race-based legislation played a role in them not getting the contracts. Just a plain yes or no. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, go for it. Who's going to reply? Is it Treasury, I suppose? And then PBO might have a view. Am I right in saying that? Who do you want the answer from primarily? All the both of them will answer. Does it matter? Okay, let's start with
the truth, please. I just want the truth.
Yeah, okay, Treasury, you start.
Chair, this is actually a question to the Department of exactly. Health, but let me say that, you know, the problem is that there's been no contracting actually with independent GPs using the grant provided. So the grant is actually not been spent. So it's been a bigger problem here. It's been a problem getting the whole thing going. Part of it has been the lack of capacity and posts within the national department, but it's actually been several years now that there's been, you know, no independent GPs. But this is also meant to be piloting capitation. So it's something it should be a problem for some years, and really the department has to, you know, move much faster on this. Thank you.
So neither black or white have been contracted. So it can't be a race issue from what I can see. PBO, do you have anything to say?
Lilia, do you want to comment on that? Otherwise, you can come with more information. Lilia?
Yeah, I have no comment on that. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, well, it's not a race issue because it's not happening. All right, then, who's next? I don't see any other hands up. Do you want to say anything in conclusion to Masani?
We are fine, Chair. Thank you so much. We will follow up with the matter, but I think it's worth contextualizing this point around engagement with the National Treasury, that there are a lot of issues. There are broadly policy issues. Hence, I needed to speak to DG, so that when you start speaking to the rest of the team, we have that understanding at broad level. But now what I'm saying, they keep piling up, getting more information time. So there's a bigger question of saying, let us have our initial meeting and disagree when it's agree, but also understand each other when we come back. When we go, we're coming from different camps and so on. But I think they're kind of up with our information. So we'll follow up on that and we'll update.
Now, you see, those issues were raised in the previous term when I was chairing SCOF. I'm not there now. You must go to Ms. Maswangani.
No, this term, sir.
You mean under
this term, finance, yes, in this term. In last year, 2 years ago.
Is it in SCOF?
In finance committees, yes, but we've also raised issues of getting more information.
All right, like just find the relevant recommendation in the report. I will follow up on it, but I'll speak to Joe, because he must take responsibility for SCOF decisions, because when you hand over, you don't continue. You can't rule from the grave, as it were. You must just do it, because it's a committee decision. Okay,
good. So much.
But if it's here in SCOF, I'll do it now. Send it to me this afternoon. I will ring Momo this evening, and I'll reply to you, okay? Okay. Lubabalo, just WhatsApp me and check, follow up on this matter with Momo. If indeed, send it to Lubabalo, because Nkululeko is on leave, right? Paternity leave. And this, if it's a SCOF matter for this week, Lubabalo is a secretary for both until Nkululeko returns to work. Okay. Having said that, Is there any other outstanding issue, Mark? Do you want to say anything?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the committee. Thank you.
Good. Okay, now we've got Lubabalo. Is anything left out on this matter?
No, Chairperson, we...
Is the co-chair here or she's left? She should go to sleep, you know, and rest. But anyway, she's here. Because if you want to say anything, what's the point of you cheering while you're still there? Why, thanks to Mark for attending. What about the PBO? But anyway, I get it. Chairperson Mashlango, do you want to say anything? Okay, let's not pester her. What's left the minutes of the 7th of June? Right? Colleagues, put the minutes up, please, Dumbavala. I got them here.
No, we adopted them, Chairperson, already.
Oh, that was before. That's right. We started on. Yeah, but on the agenda, it's the next item. I'm looking at the agenda. Okay, so you actually violated your own agenda. We should hold you to account. You're very, very bureaucratic and strict with us. So it's my turn to rattle you because of the last item. All right, is there anything else on that agenda? I don't see anything else. Closure.
No, Chairperson, we're done. It will be closure. Then offline, I'll speak to you about the agenda items of the Select Committee on Finance for next week.
Yeah, I'm working on that right now. I was doing it, by the way. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, my friend. Nothing else, comrades, colleagues, friends? Who is there anything? I see a chat. There's something in the chat. What's that? Oh, yeah. Okay. There's the Freedom Front Plus's legal opinion, but it'll be sent to you to send out to members of the Appropriations Committee. Okay. Because the same committee as finance. Thank you all. Keep well. Best wishes to our chair.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.